The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe. Smash that like and come and join us in the chat, a.k.a. the Cover 3 tailgate. Where? Jerry says, Danny boy, the beard is calling. We've got, calls for Amish Danny. We've got saying, Jerry says, perhaps in lieu of growing a beard, you could wear a fake one just for the podcast, but it's a real deal, though. And actually, hold on. We've got a little bit of breaking news. What stands out about what he's got so far?
If Bo Nix is a 16th overall pick, I will grow out my beard and I will never shave again. There it is.
Wait, what if he's a 15th?
Yeah, 16th or like 16th or higher.
Clip this.
Yeah,
clip
don't pin us on a technicality where he has to be 16. You're saying if he is 16 or higher, yes, growing out your beard.
Yes. If Bo Nix is a 16th overall pick, I will grow out my beard and I will never shave again.
If Bo Nix is a 16th overall pick, I will grow out my beard and I will never shave again.
Yeah. So, all right. Danny is sick as a dog right now. He popped on.
He's faking.
No. I got to give him credit. He jumped on and he showed us the stubble is growing, right?
Mm-hmm.
He showed us that he is at least starting to take the efforts. And his radio partner, Dusty Dvorak, they had me on the show this morning. And Dusty's, he's on the team. He said, do not let Danny get away with it. Tom, you were on with Danny on CBS Sports HQ on Friday. I did not get a chance to watch. I was at a doctor's appointment, one of my kids' doctor's appointment. So what's the proposal? What's the compromise that you proposed on CBS Sports HQ?
Well, I ambushed him on the show. He thought he was up there with Prisco to talk about the draft, and then I just showed up and just to call him out on his little beard thing. First of all, he is trying to get out of it. He's truly sick today, but he's trying to get out of it. He's been working behind the scenes. He's been trying to angle for ways to get out of this deal. So I came up with a compromise because Danny's wife does not like him with the beard, does not want him to have the beard. So here's my compromise. He has to grow the beard. There's no getting out of it. He has to have a beard. His wife's just going to have to deal with it. But he doesn't have to go complete Duck Dynasty. He can trim it. He can manicure it. You know, he could groom himself. He just has to have the beard, and he has to keep it, not forever, but until Bo Nix wins his first NFL game as a starter. So if Bo Nix doesn't start next season, or they go 0-17 or whatever, Danny can't shave. So Danny now, after hating on Bo Nix and saying there was no way he'd be a top 16 pick in the NFL draft, Danny has to become the biggest Bo Nix believer on earth if he wants to get rid of his beard.
Bud, what do you think? Oh, no, you're good. You're muted.
There are some interesting opportunities here, I think. We did have one listener, I think is probably a lawyer. He kind of parsed Danny's words there. And Danny did say, if Bo Nix goes in the top whatever, you know, I will grow my beard and not shave again. But Danny did not actually specify what he would shave or not shave again. So, I mean, there are options here which Danny's wife would probably hate even more, I would think. And options in which I am not particularly interested in enforcing or checking up on. But
there unless was Manscaped wants to sponsor the show.
Oh, yeah, unless
Manscaped. Danny not so short hairs, I guess.
I love tying it to the success of Bo Nix.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah. You've got to grow a beard.
Because there's an out. Like it.
You don't have to like Duck Dynasty this, but yeah. your release from this prison can only come from the sweet arm and legs of Bo Nix.
Like he could be done by, you know, September 1st. He could shave or he could have that thing through the winter. We don't know.
Can we say Tom's joke that he said for or is that not allowed? I don't know.
I don't know if we could. Okay. I mean, right, man, you can figure it out from there.
If we ever do like a live show that's like not recorded or released, everybody just like a live in-person show, that'll be one of the Easter eggs.
What about the all right, is it a regular season game?
Yeah, preseason okay. Does. I mean, Roger Goodell said this weekend he doesn't even want to play the preseason anymore. They shouldn't count for this bet.
It would add a lot of interest to early August if it was based on a Bo Nix passing touchdown.
But how would that work? Like, is it like a pitcher? If you throw the touchdown that ends up being the game-winning touchdown, does he get credit for the win? Because he's only going to play a couple series.
I that would be giving him an easier out because then it's not tying him to a Broncos win, but it's just tying him to his first professional touchdown, regular season or preseason. That we would all get dialed in for these Broncos preseason games. And every single time Bo Nix is on the field, Danny and his whole family are just sitting there rooting for Bo Nix to throw a touchdown, only to be so disappointed when he hands it off at like the 3-yard line. That, you know, that the fact that we could just be hinging on every single time Bo Nix drops back to throw, that would be his release from beardom.
Mm-hmm. And for Danny, there is a good shot that Bo Nix will be the starter. They did take him with the 12th pick in the draft, after all. You don't usually do that to a guy you're just planning on sitting right away.
This was while we're sitting here in the Bo Nix world, and we do have a lot of just bigger, you know, NFL draft recap to come. We're going to link up. Those of you who subscribe on the audio side, you saw that after the first round, you know, we got a nice little present dropped in from Ryan Wilson, Rick Spielman, our friends at With the First Pick, the NFL Draft podcast. We are going to be linking up with them a little bit later as we already look ahead to 2025. That'll be, you know, their portion of it. We'll stay here today just looking back at the weekend. Elliot says, do you guys feel like you owe an apology to Joel Klatt for ripping his Bo Nix pick at 12? Not an apology. I think that we questioned it. And but you brought up the great, like, does he know something? Because he's like, you know, lives in Colorado.
He's a Colorado guy. Yeah.
From Colorado. Like, does him putting Bo Nix at 12 mean that he was on the inside? Possibly, you know? Yeah, I tell you what, we've got an executive at CBS Sports Digital who reached out to me with the line of questioning that says, did the listener, username Super Mariota, who put the question in, calling back to the May 1st episode when he first said it? Because this is all brought back to her. Mm-hmm. Just jumping in, a listener jumped into the 5-star mailbag, the big old bag of mail, username Super Mariota, and said, hey guys, on May 1st of 2023, Danny said this. What do you guys, are you guys ready for this? It's almost as though, I think it's Patrick Nix. I think it's somebody in Bo Nix's camp.
Might have been Sean Payton.
Has username Super Mariota and was definitely a little bit too plugged in on the possibility that Bo Nix might be a top 16 pick.
I would also say Joel Klatt was not the only person who had Bo Nix going to the Broncos at 12. It was like the reason we were, Danny was worried because there had been steam building up to this in the last week. And the thing about the week of the draft is there's always a lot of stuff and you never know what's real or what's just teams floating stuff out there because they want you to think it. So like you start hearing Nix to the Broncos at 12, but also at the same time, like all day on Thursday, like every NFL reporter is tweeting about how this team's looking to trade up out of the top 10 or into the top 10 or trade down out of the top 10. It's like every team in the league was looking to trade. And I even tweeted, I said, would all these teams be sharing that they're open for business if they were actually receiving offers? And how many trades were there to get into the top 10? One. So it's like the week of the draft, you hear the Bo Nix is going to the Broncos. It's like, okay, somebody wants somebody to trade up. So that way they think they got to get Bo Nix or whoever, whatever quarterback they want. But I guess not. Like Bo Nix going 12 was only the second biggest surprise in the top 15 as far as quarterbacks are concerned.
The Bo Nix is betting. The betting market said over under 32.5.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely a little bit of a surprise there. I will get to the other surprises from the NFL draft here in just a little bit. Before we do that, we got a couple of two-ish days to get into the portal. Doesn't mean you have to choose your destination. We'll clarify some of that. Time to jump into the portal. All right, so the last day to enter into the portal, if you are an undergraduate player, is tomorrow. You don't have to choose your destination by then. That's going to deal a lot more with like enrollment when you're trying to get in a university by university basis. But if you're a coaching staff, you know, you'd like to be able to lock this down. Business should be closing, if not this week, in the next couple of weeks. As you try to figure out what exactly your depth chart, your roster is going to look like heading into fall camp. We've got Damian Martinez, Dylan Edwards, a few different big ones to pop. Bud, which one of these portal updates do you think is the one that stands out the most to you?
Well, a couple things. One, I want to point out that you said undergraduate transfer, but actually, as Nicole Auerbach was digging through some of the basketball rules the other day, she threw this out there on Twitter. Guys, they moved the graduate transfer rule up to this date as well. So
interesting.
Okay. It's an all-in date now. Yeah, I was not aware of that for football, and some of the guys I spoke with actually weren't either. So basketball, football, communicating, yeah. So if you're a graduate guy, apparently you got to be in, as Nicole pointed out on Twitter. I would say, like, in totality, it's Miami, right? This was a program that was building its program through high school recruiting. That's what Mario Cristobal does best, and now they're going out and they get Damian Martinez, who's like the top back in the portal. They go out and they get Sam Brown from Houston, who I think is a guy who probably starts over Isaiah Horton, I think, who apparently had a nice spring for them. They go out and get a linebacker who started 13 games last year, you know, for Louisville. I guess he'll compete with Wesley Bethank there for that starting job opposite of Maui Noah's brother there at linebacker. Maui Noah, the one I was talking about, is their left tackle, but obviously his brother is their starter at linebacker. They get another corner who played at Marshall. Remember, Miami's DC came from Marshall, so that's that kind of connection there. He knows the system, and it just feels like a very much like all-in year. I wonder, like, is Miami the first $20 million payroll? Just run, and I'm not saying they're there yet, but like if they land one of these Michigan State D tackles coming up, in my mind, it's hard to imagine they're not paying $20
million.
Wow, you know, I've definitely thought some teams have paid 13 or 14 before. And I thought 15 was going to kind of be like the wow number, but it's hard for me to think that they're not close to 20 if they land some of these Michigan State D linemen.
Does nobody in the state of Florida recruit high schools anymore?
Seriously, man.
Just like I'm just looking now, like the recruit rankings for high schoolers, not including transfers.
Right.
In the 2025 class, and this is just in the ACC. This isn't national. Miami's fifth in the ACC. Florida State is 10th as far as recruiting. Now, Florida State has 3 4-stars and 1 5-star. It's just the number, but it's crazy to me, like, how things are shifting, particularly like in the state. What's surprising is to me, like, Florida State's doing it. Miami's doing it. Is Florida doing it? Florida's been active in the portal, but I still think they're kind of, are they? I don't know.
Yeah, Florida's not been as active in the portal. That they I know they feel good about the offensive lineman who they took. Mm-hmm. They took a D tackle, Slackman, I think is his name, who they think is going to be an important player for them. I think with the more limited spots that you give out in high school now, because most teams aren't signing like 28 high school kids anymore, I think you're exercising a little more patience in some of the offers you throw out in most instances.
And it's weird to me too, because it's Florida. It's just like one of the states where there's everybody's recruiting the high schools in Florida. And it's like the Florida schools are just like, let them go out. If they're any good, we'll just bring them back later.
Well, hey, that's a little bit of a new way to play the hometown discount. We're not doing it. You know, we're not doing it right out of high school. We'll just wait until you get frustrated that somebody took some playing time from you. And then, hey, now you're going to be in the lead to be able to get them back.
Like those kids who are like, it's not that cold up there.
I will say the Irish came into Florida yesterday and got a nice commit out of a corner named Dallas Golden, who I like quite a bit out of the Tampa area. So, I think it'll heat up for everybody more with like the June camps, right? We've had some of the Under Armour circuit has already happened here. Most of the school camps now are running in June. So I think a lot of it's like, hey, get the kids on campus, figure out what the market's going to look like, and then go from there.
Dylan Edwards commits to Kansas State. And I had not really gone through to unpack all of that Dylan Edwards journey, but buddy, it was one. Guy is the second rated player from the state of Kansas in his class. Kansas State's the first one to offer him. He was committed to Kansas State until a month later when he decommitted and then committed to Notre Dame. And then just a couple months later, he decommitted again and committed to Colorado. I mean, it was a journey. But we remember he scored 4 touchdowns in that season opening win against TCU. And though he played in every game the rest of the year, his production really cooled off. Colorado's offense cooled off a little bit, but he was definitely not the featured player that he was in that season opening debut. I think we mentioned this at the end of last week, at least this being the buzz that he might be, you know, Kansas in-state guy going back to Kansas State. Go Powercat, 24/7 Sports, Kansas State site, that doing a good job of, you know, getting the, like, I'm headed home, you know, like very, very much pumping up the homecoming angle here. Avery Johnson, DJ Giddens, Dylan Edwards, how do you imagine this all coming together for a Kansas State offense?
I mean, I think Kansas State's going to be running the option for the most part because we have to see what Avery Johnson looks like this year, but it's like when you watched last year, because I went back and I watched a bunch of Will Howard tape after the transfer to Ohio State, just, you know, trying to figure things out. But you would see the Avery Johnson snaps in between, and I don't recall him throwing many passes. It's a very similar situation to Alex Orji last year at Michigan, where it's like every time he was on the field, you just felt like they were going to run. So we have to see what that passing attack looks like. But running wise, they look like they're going to have, you know, they've got plenty of options there. I think Dylan Edwards he's a good player. Like, I don't think he's an incredible player, but he's tiny, so you can't really use him as a bell cow back. But he's also very, very fast. He's very elusive. He changes direction. So the key is, if you get your hands on him, you can tackle him. It's just, can you get your hands on him? That has been the problem for some. But like you mentioned, got off to a really hot start at Colorado last year. Was playing behind a not very good offensive line. And as the year went on, the production kind of started to slip. There's all sorts of reasons for it. But I think he's a good ad for Kansas State. I think they are going to be an interesting offense, but I don't think he's going to be like a superstar or anything.
Yeah, it's like a very nice piece that Kansas State certainly knows what to do with. And they know, like, they're familiar with him. He knows Avery. I think it'll work out well. I don't know if he's going to be a superstar there, as Tom mentioned, because volume and his frame probably doesn't lend itself to him touching the ball 15, 20 times a game. But Kansas State, like, definitely will scheme it up for dangerous type guys. And I think the fact they went out and got him after missing on him the first time around, I think it says something.
A reminder, they promoted Connor Riley. Remember, they lose Colin Klein to Texas A&M. Connor Riley was the offensive line coach. And look, Kansas State's had good offensive line. I don't – that's like a foundational thing, right? Like, okay, we're playing –
Cooper Beebe, though.
I will miss Cooper Beebe. But here's what I think Dylan Edwards is. I think Dylan Edwards is 10 touches a game. That might be 7 carries and 3 receptions, 5 and 5, something like that. I think he is 10, 11 touches a game. And what you hope is that with that truly unique athleticism of those 10 or 11 touches, you get a couple explosive plays. And if you can add that to what Kansas State already is going to be able to do, then, like you said, it is a very nice piece that when you are splitting hairs – with Utah, with Arizona, with Kansas State, when you're splitting hairs with those teams that we expect to be in the Big 12 title race, having a Dylan Edwards is going to help you win coin flips, and the winner of the Big 12 will be whoever wins the most coin flips. So I found it to be significant, especially just in the Big 12 corner of the world.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Colorado picked up actually an interesting guy from Clemson over the weekend. I don't know if he's like a guy who's going to play for them this year. So Zach Owens was a dude. We had him as a top 200 guy. So really intriguing frame. I mean, like all of 6'6", 375-ish as a recruit. I think he showed up to Clemson kind of in the 400-ish range. Mm. Didn't work out there. Obviously, like the weight was a major concern. He would need to have cut weight from what it was in high school, not added. But I saw a photo of him actually at Colorado, and he doesn't look 400 to me. So he tweeted, hey, I'm not 375 anymore. So, A, good for him for, like, personal health. B, like, kind of doubt it happens this year, but maybe, you know, next year in, like, 25, that's a guy who could be a piece that Colorado, like, normally can't get. So good job on Dion taking a chance on a guy like that. And maybe new offensive line coach Phil Lodeholt will be able to kind of slim him down and get him, you know, back on the right track.
Any other transfer portal stuff before we hit a break? And then speaking of Colorado, just a quick run through some of the spring game takeaways from the weekend. Any other portal?
SMU got Jared Harrison Hunt, who was a starter-ish type player for Miami last year. He was recruited by Rhett Lashley originally under the Manny Diaz staff. SMU's done a pretty nice job of figuring out which the guys who they recruited at Miami when they were there as part of the Diaz staff can probably play for them at SMU. SMU had lost a pretty good D tackle to the portal already, so this is an important job for them to fill, and I think Harrison Hunt will be a starter for them.
Are you surprised we haven't seen any Ohio State quarterbacks jump in the portal?
Devin Brown is the one I'm kind of surprised. I increasingly, as I talk to people who have been inside Ohio State's practices, including like the closed practices, I am coming around on the increasing possibility that Julian Sain starts. I'm not saying it's a likelihood, but I used to have it as like a 0%.
All right, right.
But I have talked to enough people who are like, hey man, the day I was there, that kid was the best. So, I mean,
you're like scanning down on the odds board and you're like, I'd like to take a flyer today. Who's going to go low? Like,
I'm moving that to the non-zero category. It is a non-zero chance that Sain is a starter.
Mm.
Based on what they've said. Now, look, they're not Ryan Day. I think that staff knows how much veteran talent's on this team. They would like some stability, which is why I think Howard will still be the starter. But I think he's flashing the upside that those guys don't have. Now, I don't know if he's flashing the floor and the consistency of the floor that you would need. And I'd be pretty surprised, but it's a non-zero chance for me now.
Yeah, to me, it would be weird with how Ohio State has approached the entire offseason for them to then throw a freshman out there, quarterback. But I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just more of a statement about Howard, Brown, Kindholz, and Nolan going on than it is saying. So I don't know.
Yeah, it might be a break glass in case of emergency situation, too.
Maybe he gets, like, snaps. Maybe there's packages for him to go out there at certain times, especially early in the season, in the lighter games.
Yeah, and the, again, 12-team playoff era, man, you might need multiple quarterbacks to win a national championship. If you're going to get through game 16, game 17, there's going to be times where you need to have somebody ready to go. I'm surprised we haven't had a Brown, a Kindholz. You know, I'm surprised in some of these other, you know, loaded up quarterback rooms that we haven't had more movement, but still 24, you know, 48 hours to be able to see if all that ends up coming. Didn't you say there's also a cool down period? Like there's a deadline, but then every single time that you enter, you also have 48 hours to be able to pull out without necessarily being locked in with penalty.
Yeah, so the institution has 48 hours to officially submit your name in. So basically, tomorrow's the deadline, right? So, like, let's say if tomorrow at, like, 6 o'clock you go in, they don't actually have, like, you don't have to officially appear in the portal until, like, Thursday, end of day. because you get the 48 hours to submit it. And then there's always like kind of like equitable tolling type stuff where, hey, this team gets an extension because they had, you know, natural disaster, like our hearts go out to the folks in Oklahoma, obviously we've seen, but like certain instances like that where it's like, okay, like they get some extra time. So I think by the actual end of business this week, we should know basically every single person who is in the portal with very few exceptions.
What do you think the percentage is going to be of the committed part? How long do you think that's going to take?
Probably like a week to 10 days, I would say, for the most part. I think a lot of these guys will know where they're going.
Mid-May, we should be set.
I think so.
Yeah. And that will then begin our process of getting all the information together so that we can get you ready for the 2024 season. Coming up on the other side, it wasn't jam-packed, but we did have some highlights. And speaking of five-star true freshmen that might start, what are we going to see in Lincoln after a big performance from Dylan Rayola? We'll get into all that and more.
Next.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, they did something really interesting. They were like, we need to get some confidence for our quarterbacks. Let's rest a bunch of starting defensive players. Let's really juice the odds right here. Competitive game, a lot of highlights. And it wasn't just Dylan Rayola, who, by the way, threw a couple dimes. I mean, Rick Arberg got in there too. Y'all see Henrik Arberg throwing like 47, 50-yard dimes, like in competitive balls too? Tom, what were you able to glean? I don't know if you were watching sort of in that Saturday afternoon, portion of the day. They were kind of the only action on from a spring game perspective. But what have you been able to pick up from what happened at Nebraska?
I mean, there's kind of what you went over. The defense is missing a lot of names, a lot of guys who matter. And boy, did it look like that when you were watching the game, because a lot of guys running around open. I think if you're a Nebraska fan, that's whether intentional or not, you got what you wanted to see, because the quarterbacks are good.
Yes. Yeah.
Like Rayola is the quote unquote, savior. He's going to be the guy to lead us back to the bowl game. But even like you said, Harburg looked good. And I remember watching Harburg a lot last year in games against, in actual battle. And he didn't look anything like the guy I saw in the spring game. So maybe he's taking a step forward in the offseason plan, or, maybe that defense is missing a lot of key players.
I thought that overall Rayola looked really good. Mm-hmm. Relative to like what they ran out at quarterback last year. I have no doubts that he's going to have some freshman moments, but at this point, I think I've seen enough to expect that he will be the guy there. And I think Nebraska looks, maybe I'll eat my words on this, but I think they look fairly justified not going into the portal quarterback market this spring. So they kind of trusted what they had in him. I think new quarterback coach Glenn Thomas probably doing a nice job there as well, helping him out. I thought he made relatively few like dumb freshman decisions, and that was impressive as in some ways as some of the big time throws that he made. I was out at Overtime Elite, the big 7-on thing, which is televised some of the games on NFL Network this weekend. I mean, you saw these guys making like crazy good throws, and it's also like, oh damn, like that's just a bad decision, right? And I thought Rayola had relatively few of those, so I was pretty impressed. I mean, pretty comfortable that team makes a bowl.
Oh, yeah. I think our win total might be 7.5, so you might need a little bit more than just make a bowl, but you've...
No, yeah. I know. If I'm Nebraska, making a bowl will be plenty. Thank you.
There is undoubtedly an upgrade at the expectation for the quarterback position in Lincoln. That, you know, I think that Arberg could start, but if he is improved, then they're going to get better play. I think this competition probably goes into fall camp, right?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And I also think, I mean, maybe it'll go into fall camp. Might be decided before that, but the competition will go into fall camp. I also think another thing that was interesting to me was, because, you know, like I looked at that Nebraska team, and obviously the quarterbacks were a huge problem last year, but it's not like they had a ton of talent at receiver. Mm-hmm. And they had a freshman kid that looked pretty, you know, exciting in the spring game, Ja'Cory Barney, who had the 41-yard touchdown catch from Harburg, but he also had like a 78-yard kick return. So, like, I feel like Nebraska has had a lack of those kind of guys the last few years as well. So seeing him out there, I mean, again, just spring game defense, missing a lot of key guys, but you're looking for reasons to be optimistic. I thought that was one too.
Who is the fifth best team in the Big Ten?
Ooh, okay.
Let's start with the top five, four: Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. God.
See, I think it's for the taking. I mean, Nebraska is in that conversation. I don't think they're, like, leading the conversation, but they're in the conversation to be a top five team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they are. Like, if Rayola reaches his – if Rayola is everything we think he is, they can be. It's just, if I'm Nebraska, my expectation – like, all I'm asking for is get to a bowl game. Anything after that, I would be, like, I'm thrilled with. But if I get to a bowl game, I don't care about anything else. So it could be Nebraska. Could be Wisconsin. Could be Iowa. Hell, it could be Michigan State. Yeah, at USC, Michigan State, depending on how Childs goes.
Depending on how you feel about Maryland, potentially.
Nah. Kind of down. Well, they did add Brian Ferentz over the weekend, so look out.
Iowa. Did we mention Iowa?
Yeah. You mentioned them there with Wisconsin, which is to say, if we were going into 2024 with the 2023 alignment of the Big Ten, then we would be like, hey, Dylan Raiola lit it up in the spring game. This is a team that could win the West. That's just not the world that we're living in the new expanded Big Ten, where it's going to be the top two teams. And like you mentioned, Bud, we can get to top four and draw a line. Now, can Nebraska be near the top of that line? Well, depends a lot to me on Wisconsin, Iowa, USC, Michigan State. But I think that in the best case scenario, they are ending up on top of the pile that will be the gluttonous middle of the Big Ten.
So one interesting team that we did not mention is Washington. And Washington, actually, if you use the Fitzgerald Spielberger chart, which is like a way of valuing like draft capital, like this is kind of like the chart that the smarter teams now use to like determine draft trades. Okay, I'll give you a first for however many, whatever. Washington was by far the best draft out of anybody. I mean, they were close to 10,000 draft points. Bama was second at like 8,800, then Michigan a little bit down, Texas right after them, then LSU and Georgia were tied, then FSU at 7,500, then a pretty big drop to like Penn State and Oregon. I mean, Washington just lost like so much high-end talent. And then the two of the guys that they didn't lose to the draft are starting center for Alabama and starting guard at Ole Miss. So it's really
it's
kind of like, wild.
But J.J. McCarthy was just a caretaker on a great team. Michael Penix carried that Washington offense.
But the reason that we didn't mention Washington is because there is just there. We cannot. What can we carry over from last year? Right. And there's no team in the Big Ten where there was going to be more drop off from last season to this season than Washington. I haven't double checked that, but off the top of my head, that sounds right.
Yeah.
10,000 draft points is nuts.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, think about like Cincinnati the year after they lose nine guys in the NFL draft and then they go to the Big 12. Like they're not terrible all of a sudden, but they're not a team where you can look at and say that team is prepared to lose all that talent and just, you know, maybe it's a game worse. Like, no, Washington's probably going to be like a 7-5 kind of team next year.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about, let's see, in the tailgate. Yeah, I mean, in the tailgate, there was a comment about Purdue. I mean, Purdue lost its best wide receiver and its best edge rusher, and couldn't hang on to him.
it's a proof of concept. I'm going to need to see it.
Much closer to dead last in the Big Ten than they are to fifth, to me.
Yeah.
To start, for sure, yeah.
I will need to see it. I like that. I'm happy to be late. I'm happy to be late for the train for that one. Colorado and Oregon also, you know, just shout out to the Pac-12 Network. Just one last hurrah. I don't know where you get it. I've had 8 Pac-12 networks for years. You know, I had so many different ways to watch. Anything stand out from those two? I did not like the discourse that starts with, look at this. First of all spring game attendance discourse is just so flat for me. I mean, just a wet sandwich conversation topic. But it was like, well, look at the spring game attendance last year and the spring game attendance this year. Well, I watched Colorado spring game. That looked miserable. It was like 39, 40 degrees, driving rain. Like the fact that many people.
You didn't like the atmosphere, Chip?
Incredible.
Yeah, it was a good thing. Yes. Any football wise, anything stand out from those two?
For Colorado, I think you can really take away that they're going to feature LaShawnte Webster a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a good player at FAU. FAU had, who's the quarterback that they got from Texas who got hurt immediately?
Casey Thompson.
Thompson.
So like, obviously their quarterback situation last year at FAU was pretty limited. LaShawnte got in there. They threw in the ball a bunch for like the first couple series, and then they yanked it. Like, to me, that says he's going to be an impact guy for them. And, you know, maybe that allows Travis Hunter to play a little bit more defense. I don't know. They picked up a corner from Auburn that I thought definitely wasn't going to start at Auburn, but like would have been your rotational type guy. So maybe that allows Travis to play more offense. I don't know. But like, the one thing I would take away is that Webster for sure is a guy to look at. I am really curious about this team and the tight end position. I know this is kind of nerdy on a Monday, but when I think Pat Shurmur, I think more NFL, more heavy sets, less spread it out like we have with Sean Lewis. Does Colorado have a tight end that you really want on the field? Because I think the optimal utilization of personnel here might be more four wide type stuff with a good pass protecting back, which we'll see if they have. But then you're kind of putting, like, if you run a lot of four wide, do you trust this O-line to go four wide? Like, I think they're clearly like four of their best 11 players on offense are receivers and then Shador. Do they have a tight end that they can actually use who people are going to care about and guard? I don't know.
I don't know.
I thought it was a good day for the Oregon quarterbacks. And I don't, you know, not just Dylan Gabriel, Dante Moore, Austin Novosad got out there. It seemed all right. I mean, it's a pretty solid quarterback room that they have right there. I also thought that, you know, defensively, I mean, Mateo Uyunglele is awesome. You know, they had to replace Brandon Dorlus. They had to replace some defensive linemen. Looks like some of those additions are going to end up working out all right. Saw Kobe Savage transfer from Kansas State get a little banged up. There were a few other injuries that nothing. Dan Lanning said after the game, none of them were, I think his quote was, football is football. And like none of them, you know, seemed to be really, you know, big. Trayshawn Holden also got a little bit nicked up. But I just, I'm in. They answer a lot of questions whenever you're trying to figure out what the strengths are, what the weaknesses are going to be. Now they just got to go out and do it.
It feels like I have not watched the spring game yet, but just when I was going over some roster notes, it feels like a very high floor operation there. I don't know if they have a whole lot of like first rounders, you know, but I think they have a whole lot of guys who are pretty good football players.
Right. And if you trust the coaching staff, then they'll be able to go and take care of business.
I think they'll be fine.
Speaking of injuries, Nebraska had a receiver and a DB go down. So we'll have to monitor that.
All right. We will definitely keep our eye on that. Coming up on the other side, we already got into Danny and the Bo Nix bet. And we will get Danny as he continues to grow his stubble out on Wednesday's show. He did jump in. That man was horizontal. He's sick as a dog, but he's a soldier. We'll continue that conversation. But what about the conversation about the NFL draft as a whole? You know, we mentioned some of those teams at the top of the list when you count them up by school. What does it say by conference, both the 2023 conferences and also the 2024 conferences? Big storylines and more.
Next.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, there were only five schools who got double-digit NFL draft picks this year. They were Michigan, they were Texas, they were Alabama, Washington, and Florida State. Those are five schools. It's so tough to figure out how to rank those five schools. I mean, it can be so difficult. I mean, you could use draft picks. You could use their record last year. I mean, it's almost like we got to say one's got to go. Tom, let's play this game. It's Michigan, Texas, Alabama, Washington, and Florida State. If you had to put one to the side, which one would it be?
Well, I mean, Michigan, you can't put Michigan to the side because they had the most.
Right.
I would put Florida State to the side, honestly. Yeah. Just, you know, I don't know.
It's just, Jordan Travis, and you gotta think about who would you not want to play, right? I
mean, what happens if Jordan Travis isn't?
Who would you not want to play, right? Alabama or Florida State?
If Jordan Travis isn't drafted, what does that Florida State draft class really look like?
That's true. That's right. You got to think about these very silly hypotheticals and ignore everything that happened. That's the way we do it in college football. Mm-hmm.
Only six in the top 100. It's slacking.
So Michigan, how about another how smart or plugged in is our listenership, especially those who come to the tailgate and those who submit questions to the big old bag of mail. Remember the how many Michigan players is Jim Harbaugh going to draft?
Mm-hmm.
Two. He still came through. What was it in the third? Colson in the third and then someone else in the seventh.
Oh yeah. He took Cornelius Johnson in the seventh.
Yeah. So Junior Colson and Cornelius Johnson, that's our answer. I think they might have even set an over-under at 1.5. Congrats. Mm-hmm. The over hits. Jim Harbaugh drafts two Michigan Wolverines from Michigan's collection of 13. That falls short of the record. You know, there was a little bit of buzz, a little bit of chatter or intrigue in terms of whether they would match or top Georgia's current record of 15 players in a single draft. What are some of the other sort of like school-specific stuff that might have stood out either on one end or the other?
I feel like the 49ers and the Lions they draft guys who play hard and give a shit. Like consistently. I looked at that guy is a dude who cares. And I don't know if that's just something that culturally inside those two, I don't watch a lot of NFL. I looked at the drafts this morning. Damn. Okay. Like, yeah, I like these.
It matches Dan Campbell. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah. That's just 49ers too. I mean, it's
yeah.
49ers don't watch you if you're not willing to block or run through tackles. Like if you go out of bounds, the 49ers won't draft you. As far as teams, I mean, we kind of talked about Washington and how many of their guys not only went, but went pretty early in the draft in the process, but did it with the draft capital value. It's just like, that was pretty good. I was overall for teams. I don't know if there were any truly huge surprises other than, oh, the best teams in the country all had the most players drafted. Crazy.
So your joke over the weekend, Tom, actually inspired something that I wrote for CBSSports.com on Sunday. Not, it was like winners, losers, but I said winner and loser, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Because mm-hmm. on one hand, you only had four players drafted. And every single year since 2016, Ohio State has had six players or more drafted. So we are falling way off of the pace. But why do I say winner and loser? Like, sure, you're down there where you're with Iowa and Illinois with four players drafted. But if you had added Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, Emeka Abuka, Travion Henderson, and Tyleek Williams, at a minimum, I think all five of those players would have certainly been drafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If everybody who could have gone did go for Ohio State, they would have had 9 or 10 players drafted and been right there among the best teams in the country. Instead, they are down near the bottom of the count from where they used to be and near the top of our preseason top 25 list, only challenging Georgia, because players who have the potential to be playing on Sundays this year are playing on Saturdays in Columbus for the Buckeyes. Those are pros, and they are going to be leading Ohio State.
Okay, Tom.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned that Ohio State had as many draft picks as Illinois, and I think that is the key takeaway here, is that Illinois has caught up to Ohio State. Ryan Day is on the hot seat, and in all seriousness, in the last 3 years, the most draft picks out of Big Ten schools have been Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and then Illinois. So,
I was on Dogs 247 this morning looking at Georgia's top 10 likely 2025 draft picks, and I had like an oh damn moment, because Dom Lovett is 10.
He's at the bottom. Like, there are nine players who project to be more draftable than Georgia's best wide receiver, who is coming off a great spring.
Then Ohio State kind of have a little bit of that same thing going on. Mm-hmm. They had some guys who could have gone who didn't, and some really accomplished guys who were basically told to find somewhere else to play, I think, because the freshman we have behind you is better. So,
and also, too, like, you know, we talk about Michigan having 13 guys taken. Michigan's got like another 5 or 6, like, first or second day guys on the team for next season already.
I'm like really confident Michigan has 4 or 5 top 100 picks in next year's draft who are not eligible for this one.
I think they have 3 in like the top 30.
They might have 3 first rounders on that defense.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It was Graham Johnson. Mm-hmm. Like, those are 3 guys that could have their names called definitely Thursday night of next year.
Jay Sean could, for sure. Like, we'll see about the back. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I wanted to point out like the positive impact that NIL is having on the sport, I think. So like Sam Hartman went undrafted, right? Like, Sam Hartman's value as a college player is way more than his NFL value. I know he got it like a decent undrafted free agent deal with the
Commanders.
Yes, thank you.
Jaden Daniels hot seat already.
Yes, but I mean, he probably made close to $1 million last year with Notre Dame, depending on which reports you believe. Some said more, some said less, but let's just ballpark it around there for the sake of argument. Like, that's an awesome thing to be able to do as a player, because sometimes your value actually is way more in college than it is the NFL. We did not have a quarterback pick between picks 15 and 150. It was like, hey, there's 6 QBs that we as the league think can play and play right now, and we're going to all jump up and take them. And then we're going to take 5 wild cards. It was like Joe Milton, Spencer Rattler, Jordan Travis, Michael Pratt, and one other of like guys who clearly need a lot of work if they want to play in the NFL, but do have some kind of tool.
Right.
You know, that maybe like an NFL, like with Milton, it's his arm, with Jordan, it's his legs, you know, like that type of thing. So, I mean, I think we're getting a higher quality of quarterback play staying in college for longer, because guys are not having to jump solely because of money before they're actually ready to go play.
It's a great call. I like that point. Pointing out,
it's good for our game to not have like as much quarterback play.
Right. So on the conference count, the SEC leads the way with 59 picks. The Pac-12 finishes second among all others, which is one sweet final farewell for a league that's exploding this summer.
Too late.
Yeah, they had a tremendous season on the field. 5-6 teams in the top 25 for most of the year. They have a tremendous showing here in the NFL draft, but let's disperse them a little bit. Let's put everybody where they're going to be. The Super 2, the Big Ten, and the SEC combined had 55.5% of the NFL draft picks. All of the other conferences, all of the other countries, I mean, we're talking, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, ACC and Big 12 or Missouri Valley in England, Okay. Like everyone else in the world had 45, 44 point something percent of the NFL draft picks. And the Super Two, the Big Ten and the SEC are 55.5%. There has always been an uphill battle. I mean, ACC's flashed up there. Pac-12 has flashed up there. Big 12 has been kind of consistently behind, and losing Texas and Oklahoma is only going to further kneecap their NFL draft production. But man, the consolidation of talent on full display with some of these NFL draft numbers.
I mean, that number is nuts, 55%. But what I think the other number is that I don't think has been discussed nearly as much, but I think it's pretty pertinent too. What percentage of players drafted were Power Four players compared to Group of Five players?
Oh, because Group of Five.
You have really seen a dip in the players coming from the Group of Five, and as far as guys being taken.
And that's twofold, right? Number one, the best pro producing programs are now in power conferences. Mm-hmm. Looking at you, Cincinnati, UCF, players that have had like good athletes that are always going to get scouts' attention. And then on the second piece of this being that because of the transfer portal, if you're really good at the G5, then you're probably entering the NFL draft after being a power conference player for at least one season.
Mm-hmm. I do think that there is a trend emerging. I need to quantify this. So this is just anecdotally, but like eyeballing it, I think that transfer downs are largely overrated.
Right. Like,
meaning
going from P5 to G5 or P4 to G5.
Yes. Yeah. Like if you have the talent to play at a P5, but you're having to transfer down to a G5, there's probably something else that is not immediately obvious, and you're not making it to the pros, right? Like I see some of these teams that are really excited. Oh, we got this guy, you know, he signed at Tennessee. This guy signed at Michigan, and he transferred out and like way down. If you fall all the way out of the Power Five, that probably says something about your game to me. Like I'm very skeptical of those type of transfers now.
We don't. What position, and again, you haven't run the data on this, so I'm not trying to put you in a difficult spot, but outside of quarterback, what position do you think we see that the most, the stepping down? Because we know how you pull up. You pull up because there's not only but so many offensive linemen and defensive linemen, so power programs with money to spend are like, hi, you're 6'2 and weigh at least 330 pounds? Sure, we'll teach you the rest.
I would probably receiver.
Yeah. I was going to say receiver, defensive lineman would be my guess because it's just like the draft. Those are the value positions. So if you're a G5 team willing to take a lotto ticket on a P5 guy who hasn't gotten a starting job, it's probably going to be a receiver or defensive lineman.
Yeah. I will not. I would stop in terms of thinking that there's something wrong if you go from Super 2 to like ACC Big 12. I think you probably still could play in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just might be a depth chart. You know, like spending power
might just be Oklahoma State's got more money than my ACC or my SEC team's willing to pay me right now.
Right. Like we've got a situation where you're the fifth best player in your position group at a Super 2 school. You can go be the second best player and command a different salary at an ACC or Big 12 school. So I'm not going to cast judgment, but I do think that's a very astute observation. It's been out there for a long time. Did y'all get hot and bothered by the Michael Penix stuff? It feels like that's a bigger Atlanta Falcons NFL sort of topic. It didn't really get my gears going.
My problem with the pick has nothing to do with Michael Penix. I would not take Michael Penix with a top 10 pick, but if you believe in him, I mean, in this QB, the QB market in the draft, you have to go get him. My only problem is the Falcons. It's like, well, then what the hell did you give Kirk Cousins all that money for if you're going to draft a guy in waiting who's already 24? That process-wise, it made no sense to me.
I totally agree. Like if you're taking Penix in the first round, it's because you think he's ready right now to win. He's 24 in a week. Drake May just turned 21. Like you have a little more kind of wiggle room for the prime of this guy's career, letting him develop type thing. That I would have had much less a problem with taking Penix there if it was a team that actually had planned to start him. Like if the argument's, hey, the rest of our roster is ready to win now, and we can have a cheap, cost-controlled quarterback for 4 to 5 years, play him in his ages 24 to 29 season, and then if he's not special, do what I assume San Francisco will do with Brock Purdy, which is like, you know, not – make the mistake of Daniel Jonesing him and move on. But the fact that they're like, yeah, it's cool if he sits for 5 or 6 years. No, it's not, guys. Mm-hmm. You don't want a guy making his first career starts at 30 or 31. So that was wild. I'm not a Bucs fan. I don't really have an NFL team, but I have a lot of friends living in Florida who are Bucs fans. And I'm just like, guys, you're just sitting so pretty because the rest of this division is just so remedial, right? That, like, you guys, in comparison, just make reasonably competent, not sexy, just okay picks. I mean, Carolina is a disaster. The Saints are like a salary cap disaster. And Atlanta has no idea what the hell it's doing. So, I mean, congrats on the Bucs. They're going to be like the annoying Patriots teams. And the Patriots were actually good. I mean, they were great, obviously. But, like, the rest of that division just sucked to high heaven. Like, it just, you're going to get, like, a home playoff game for, like, the next 100 years. It's crazy.
What the Penix pick immediately brought to mind, I'll go to another YouTube channel here. JT O'Sullivan, the former NFL quarterback, does a YouTube channel called the QB School. And the one thing he was saying in his quarterback draft rankings video he released last week or whatever is that there's a lot of reasons, you know, quarterbacks won't work out at the NFL level. You talk about the supporting cast. You could talk about the coaching and the coaching change and all that kind of stuff. But he says he thinks the number one thing that hurts young quarterbacks is poor ownership. And I will just say, based on what I've heard, it wasn't the general manager or the coaches pushing for Michael Penix in the top 10 in Atlanta. It was the person who makes the final decision on all the checks.
Oh, wow. Isn't he, like, pretty old?
He's 80. He's very much in a win-now mode. But, again, even if that's your whatever, I don't think Michael Penix is the win-now move. It should just be draft the best whatever player that's there because you're trying to win now. That's why you signed Kirk Cousins. But I've been told from some people that it was very much an ownership decision.
Have you followed the NFL analytics idea that there is no such thing as a steal, but there is such thing as a reach?
What is it?
Yeah.
It's interesting. So they use, like, I know Ben Robinson does, like, grinding the mocks, and there's, like, the consensus big board guys and stuff. And the concept is essentially, if you want to boil it down, like, if you jump up to take a guy well above where everybody else has him, chances are you're not correct. Because you have to be, like, the one team that's right, and the other 31 teams have to basically, like, be wrong in their evaluation. However, if kind of the same thing applies to, like, oh, they got a guy, he slipped, like, 90 spots past where he's projected. That's not actually a steal. The overwhelming likelihood is that the league knows something about this guy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, you, the team taking him, probably knows it too, because the fact that he slid this far.
That you're just like, whatever.
We can't believe he was still on the board.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, these reaches, like, the odds that Ruke Aroro ends up being a steal at where the Falcons took him, which was way, way over big board analysis, I believe, is pretty low. At least historically. I think there's always exceptions.
I forgot they also reached for Ruke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, if you're the Bucs, you're like, guys, we'll take a kicker again in round two or round one, whatever it took him.
I think the Ruke Aroro move was much more defensible in that, if you look at the interior defensive linemen in this class, the top two guys consensus-wise were Newton and Murphy, both of whom are considered undersized. If you're concerned, like if your defensive scheme, your coach, whatever, you don't want a smaller guy, you need a bigger body athlete, then I can easily see why Ruke Aroro might be the top defensive tackle on your board.
Any other surprises in terms of just sort of where guys went?
My biggest surprises, honestly, were – when you mentioned this is kind of just going with what Bo was saying. I was surprised Troy Franklin fell to 102nd in the fourth round or the third round with the Broncos. I mean, I get it. Like, he doesn't have the most advanced route tree and he has some drop issues, but I just think speed-wise, there's plenty.
He's so good.
Yeah, but I get it. And then, Bud, you mentioned, like, Detroit just kind of drafting dudes who work. Like, them getting Mekhi Wingo as late as they did. It's like, I don't think Mekhi Wingo is some superstar. But I do think that, like, as far as workman-like rotation dude who you can probably rely on, he's worth it. And in this defensive tackle class where I thought there wasn't a ton of depth, I was like, I'm surprised he fell that far. And then speaking of the same thing, Christian Mahogany going to Detroit with the 210th pick. Like, Mahogany is somebody who strikes me based on watching him. Like, that dude's going to start. Like, he might not be an all-pro. He might not be, you know, the greatest guard in the league, but he's going to start, and he's going to be a rotational piece on your offensive line. So for him to fall to the seventh round, and then, of course, the Bears got the best defensive player in the draft in the fourth round with the 122nd pick when they drafted Torrey Taylor from Iowa.
That's elite there. The one I'm going to go with is a guy, it's just so on the nose for how they draft and like how that team plays. The Steelers got Peyton Wilson with pick 98.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 6'3 7/8", 233. He ran 4.43 at the combine with a 1.54 split and jumped 35 inches. And they're like, I don't know if he's going to make it to a second contract.
Who cares?
I don't care.
How many linebackers and running backs are you planning to sign to a second contract? Who cares?
The first 15 picks were offense, first 14 picks were offense. Do you think that suggests that we will have maybe a more defensive slanted game this year in our sport of college football?
No, I think it just suggests that nobody is like, I don't think this defensive class was all that great this year. Like, I don't think there was an edge rusher in this class. Cause it's like, when you look at the top of the draft, it's always quarterback, offensive tackle, edge rusher. I thought there were quarterbacks. I thought there were tackles that were worthy of being up there. I didn't think there was an edge rusher in this class worthy of it. So I think you just see that slide. But I also wouldn't be surprised if next year an offensive tackler and edge rusher are the number one pick.
Was it 10 wide receivers in the top 37?
Top 34, I thought.
Think so, yeah. Right?
Okay. I
had over 6.5 receivers first round, and that hit.
I took note of that. I was like, I wonder if – I mean, like, look, you're still going to have Texas. Looks like the wide receiver room is loaded. Ohio State's wide receiver room is loaded. It's not as though there are not individual places that are going to be, stockpiling talent at the wide receiver position. Georgia's wide receiver room is loaded. Oregon's might be right up there in that conversation as well. But I don't know if there's like a lot of super, super dominant wide receivers. And you combine that with 6 first round quarterbacks. I could see the pass game anecdotally maybe feeling like there's less monsters in college football this year.
I mean, you did have 3 receivers in this draft that would most years be considered the number one receiver in the class.
If McMillan was in this draft, like, where is he going among the receivers? Is he like top 5, top 8?
He's at worst probably a late first.
Yeah. Which McMillan?
Jalen, if he was in next year's class.
No. Arizona McMillan.
Oh, Teteroa McMillan. Oh. Sorry, I was thinking Jalen.
Like him or A.D. Mitchell, him or Keon Coleman, him or Xavier Worthy. Like, I think we can agree he's not top 3 amongst these guys so far.
No, but
he's pretty damn good.
He's really good. He would fall into A.D. Mitchell, Keon Coleman.
I would say late first, early second.
Kind of that Ricky Pearsall range.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he's maybe slightly better than that, but again, it would depend on what he ran. Like Pearsall jumped out of the gym and ran really well.
Right.
And was super productive. So, I think we have definitely a receiver drought a little bit this year compared to this past year.
Time to run the dang ball, baby. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Illinois is going 14-0.
We will be back on Wednesday as we turn the page, looking ahead over the next couple of shows. Again, lots of interactive, taking questions from the live tailgate and also the big old bag of mail. I know we went real heavy on the NFL draft last Thursday. We owe y'all some. We will get to that. But we are going to start to look at what the 2025 NFL draft class is going to look like with our friends Ryan Wilson and Rick Spielman with the first pick. We're going to look at who the next stars are. We just mentioned all these wide receivers that are going to be gone. Maybe not it's related to NFL draft, but also sometimes the stars of college football are not necessarily going to be at the top of mock drafts. So starting to turn the page now that the NFL draft cycle is done. Come hang out with us 11 a.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. And one last one out here. I liked this one. Dion made a deal with the Broncos. This is from LSU in the live tailgate. Dion made a deal with the Broncos. They drafted Nick's top 16 this year so that he could pull one over on Danny. And in return, the Broncos can draft Shador. So Shador Sanders' landing spot determined by the rivalry between Deion Sanders and Danny Kanell. That's a narrative that I am very willing to continue. It's hard to put goals.
Keep the house, the boys watch it.
Yeah. There you go. That's how we do this. And you can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Danny's faking.
Moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.